The platform party is just taking its place on the platform now. And just arriving is the president of the Michigan State University, Dr. Hanna. And on the far side, the Honorable Earl Warren, Chief Justice of the United States. In a moment, President Hanna will go to the podium and we will begin this ceremony, which will feature an invocation. First the singing of America, then the invocation.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ask our guests to rise and join students and faculty in singing one verse of America, accompanied by the Michigan State University Band under the direction of Professor Leonard Falcone, and then we shall remain standing for the invocation. One verse of America, and remain standing. Invocation will be offered by the Reverend Francis M. Donahue of the Department of Religion and of St. Andrew's Orthodox Parish of East Lansing, Dr. Donahue.
Let us pray. O Almighty and Eternal God, the source of all knowledge and truth, look graciously upon us on this day of joy as we humbly offer to thee our profound thanksgiving and praise for the many opportunities each of us has received for intellectual growth and learning at this university. Let the voice of our prayer rise before the eternal throne of thy glory as we beseech thee to grant thy divine guidance and assistance to those who graduate today. Grant that each of them may become increasingly aware of the vocation to which they are called, and strengthen them to pursue tirelessly and unselfishly the fullest development of the potentialities of their minds, their souls, and their skills, for thy greater honor and glory, and for the benefit of all mankind. May the seeds of learning which have been planted in them here bear abundant fruit as they seek to devote themselves in the diverse careers and callings that thou hast given unto them. Behold with thy gracious favor our university and those who guide its destiny. Bless those who are dedicated to teaching and those who search here for eternal truth. Bless our nation and our people with honorable industry, sound learning and purity of conduct, that peace may endure and liberty be preserved. May each of us who stand in thy presence, cognizant of the challenges which face us, enjoy thy continued inspiration. In a world of ever-expanding vistas and opportunities, let no one of us be motivated by self-seeking, vain ambition, or contention. Suffer us not to disturb the order of justice, O thou who lovest equity above all things. Let not ignorance draw us into devious paths, but guided by thy heavenly light, may we in all things hold fast to justice, tempered by mercy, that our judgments may in no wise be at variance with thee. O Lord, who blessest those who bless thee, and sanctifies those who put their trust in thee, bless these graduates, their parents, their professors, and all who have had a share in making possible this day of joy and achievement. For to thee belongs all honor, praise, and thanksgiving, now and forever, and unto ages of ages. Amen.
There's a pause here as President Hanna makes some adjustments at the podium. The class of 65 has just been seated after about a half an hour of standing. They have some...
A truly distinguished American honors us by coming here today to participate in the 105th commencement of Michigan State University. The catalog of his public services qualifies him for recognition as one of the outstanding citizens of this era of our history. The quality of his services as a political leader and public servant, 10 years governor of California, candidate for the vice presidency, Chief Justice of the United States, qualifies him for the highest levels of distinction. His claim to the everlasting gratitude and appreciation of his fellow Americans rests on even more substantial footings. It was our good fortune that he was presiding over our highest tribunal at a time when decisions of momentous import were to be made. Historians looking back on this period in American history will surely agree that as in a few previous instances, the Supreme Court made the crucial decisions as to the course and pattern of our social, political, and economic development. There are some who disagree violently with the philosophy of the court, and some of its decisions may be modified in time as this court has modified earlier decisions. It appears certain that some of them, such as the decision in the school desegregation cases, will stand as landmarks in the movement of our people toward a better society. Our speaker took both his undergraduate and professional degrees from the University of California, a distinguished sister land-grant university, and has since received an honorary degree from his alma mater, as well as from many other universities. His career has been a repetition of the familiar American success story as he moved step by step to positions of ever-increasing responsibility. He learned not only the theory of political science, but also its practical application. He was not content to be a student of the law, but became its skilled practitioner. Elevated to high places, he did not become remote from the people with whom he had worked and whom he had served, but carried with him a continuing concern for their welfare. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great privilege to welcome to Michigan State University and to present to this commencement convocation Earl Warren, the Honorable, the Chief Justice of the United States, Mr. Chief Justice.
Dr. Hanna, members of the Board of Trustees, members of the faculty, students, graduates, and friends of Michigan State University, you honor me greatly by allowing me to participate in this important occasion with you, and my pleasure is twofold: to share with you the satisfaction of academic accomplishments, which this day signifies would by itself be amply rewarded. I am sure that of the many milestones which lie ahead of you, few will equal the significance of this one, being accorded the status of alumnus of one of our most distinguished universities makes this a doubly gratifying experience. I shall value the memories of this day, as I know you will, for a long time to come. I view commencement as one of the most cherished institutions. Its very name is felicitous, for though this marks the attainment of a significant goal, it is really, as the word indicates, the beginning. It is true that you have finished a formal stage of your education, but unless the process of learning continues, and unless what you have learned is put to good use, the formal education signifies but little. What does it mean to be educated? Who is an educated person? I know of no better definition than the one given by your own president, Dr. Hanna. Though Though his words may be familiar to many of you, they cannot too often be recalled. Listen, an educated man in a democracy is one who is trained and conditioned to be an effective citizen. He need not necessarily be a man who has attained great wealth or professional distinction or high public office. He may not be known far beyond the borders of his own community, but he will have been educated to contribute to society economically to the limits of his creative and productive skills. He will have been educated to contribute socially by his understanding of the world around him and his tolerance for the rights and opinions of others. He will have been educated to contribute morally by his acceptance and observance of the fundamental values. And he will have been educated to contribute politically by his reasoned, thinking approach to political issues, his rejection of demagogic appeals, and his willingness and ability to lead or to follow with equal intelligence. Now, each one of the facets of the foregoing definition warrants fuller consideration than there is time for this afternoon. However, I should like to mention a few thoughts which come to mind. Nothing could be more important today than, as he said, our understanding of the world around us and our tolerance for the rights and opinions of others. If adherence to that principle is not made an active part of our lives, all our book learning will be as naught. And who of us can fail to admit that between the time-honored principles of our most treasured guidelines and our day-to-day practices still lies a chasm which must be bridged? The day after tomorrow marks the 750th anniversary of one of these important guidelines. It was on June 15th in the year 1215 that the feudal barons at Runnymede exacted from an oppressive monarch, King John, the pledges embodied in the Magna Carta. That charter remains one of the greatest secular documents ever written. Its significance far transcends the historical confines which surround it, for it has proved to be the germination of an ever-growing greatness. Its ringing phrases span the centuries. For example, it said, "We will sell to no man. We will not deny or delay to any man, either justice or right." But who can truly say, despite the progress which has been made since those timeless words were written, that their objective has been completely realized? In this part of our country, I am always reminded of another great document, with its signposts of tolerance and understanding. I refer to the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, which was enacted by the Continental Congress. I am sure that many of you have never read it, and I commend it to your reading. This amazing instrument, perhaps more than any other of the many treasures of our country's archives, seems to reveal what was in the hearts and minds of the American people at the time our nation came into being. It constituted the blueprint for development of not only the area which is now Michigan and the other parts of the great Northwest Wilderness Territory, but for the rest of the undeveloped parts of our country as well. In this document was embodied the universal human aspiration of freedom under law. Knowing that their liberties could not be secure in a society in which freedom was denied to some, the drafters imposed upon the future states as a compact to forever remain unalterable the obligation to preserve the basic liberties of the people within their borders. Among its many provisions was this one: religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Now, while we have taken many forward steps in the field of education, we remain far short of the goal envisaged in the Great Northwest Ordinance. You are all familiar with other great instruments, such as the Declaration of Independence, with its self-evident truth that all men are created equal, and the Constitution of the United States, dedicated to ensuring domestic tranquility and to promote the general welfare. You well know about the inspiring but not always fulfilled assurances of freedom in these treasured sources. Not so familiar are the words of other venerable documents, such as the original state constitutions, for example, the Bill of Rights of the Virginia State Constitution. The words of its first section have a noble ring. All men are by nature equally free and independent, and have certain inherent rights of which they cannot divest their posterity, namely, the enjoyment of life and liberty, with the means of acquiring and possessing property, and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Since those words were proclaimed, 189 years have elapsed. Now, have we always been faithful to their promises? The answer is provided by the Commission on Civil Rights, whose chairman since its inception has been your own Dr. Hanna. You can be justly proud of the accomplishments of your president and the commission, and the nation should be deeply indebted to them. The commission said this: the gap between the great American promise of equal opportunity and equal justice under the law, and its at times startlingly inadequate fulfillment in practice, has been a major and probably a creative factor in American history from the beginning of the nation. The conflict between those who would extend the Republican principle to all men and those who would limit it to some men or who would delay its application has produced a tension in the minds and hearts of Americans and in American laws that is with us still. I hope that you, the members of the class of 1965 at Michigan State University, will help to close that gap between our principles and our practices. One way of doing so is to take part in the operation of your government. Participation in governmental and political affairs is a hallmark of a truly educated man. It is not my thought that all of you should earn your livings in governmental service. I would like to think, however, that many of you will choose to do so because the service is worthy of the best that is in you. It is the biggest business in America. This is so, not from choice, but from necessity. It is the most important business in America because it affects the well-being of every one of us, and its facets are sufficiently numerous to offer both challenge and opportunity to all who engage in it seriously. What I do urge upon all of you is to satisfy the basic obligation of citizenship, that of participating as a citizen in all the levels of your government. I urge you not to delay, as so many college graduates have done. Many graduates have deliberately put off the day of their activity in such affairs until they have succeeded in their chosen field on the theory that they will then have more time for it. I urge you to do it now for three important reasons. The first is because in all probability you have more time now than at any other period of your active career. You have more energy now than you will have at any future time. The ideals which you have absorbed during your years here are undiluted through contact with some of the sordid things of life. And frustration is not a part of your vocabulary. Secondly, it may be too late to remedy some things you know should be remedied if you wait until the evening of your lives. And the third reason is that if you do wait until that time, you will not have laid the foundation for effectiveness. The parade will have gone by. Altogether, too many people scorn participation in politics. They take for granted our heritage of freedom and conclude that because Americans have had it for a considerable length of time, it will always be our lot. But there is no such assurance. I call your attention to the fact that throughout history, good governments responsive to the will of the people, one after another, came into being only to give way to some form of autocracy when the people lost their determination to govern themselves well. When Rome was a young republic, centuries before the birth of Christ, many republics flourished around the Mediterranean, but all except Rome soon gave up the ghost, largely because they became tired of governing themselves. But Rome lasted for 1,000 years because its institutions were rooted in law and citizenship was considered an office. But it too fell when the people became tired of their civic obligations and permitted government to fall into incompetent and corrupt hands. There are a few additional observations I should like to make in connection with participation in governmental affairs. In taking a stand on matters of public interest, the truly educated person will not be affected by whether or not his position conforms to the majority. On the other hand, he will not cultivate idiosyncrasies just for the sake of being different. He will do what he feels is right, but will not be so timid in differing with others that he is obsessed with fear of being wrong. Many years ago, Walter Lippmann put the thought very nicely when he wrote, "Anyone who picks his way through the world as if he were walking on eggs will find it a difficult and unsatisfactory place. Writers and scientists and statesmen who are forever preoccupied with their immediate reputation, always counting the costs, are buying rubbish for a fortune. The thinker who has a mortal fear of being wrong will give all that is valuable in himself to that little ambition. A mistake matters far less than most of us imagine. The world is not brittle, but elastic." You graduates of Michigan State, who have so recently been trained in the need for pursuing the truth and in methods of conducting that pursuit, can exert a great influence in your community. You have learned that truth cannot be obtained from the casual news accounts of the day, through social gossip, or in any other offhand manner. Eliciting truth requires daily effort and self-discipline. It calls for the application of the past. As Santa Anna once wrote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." How often has it been true that by failing to remember what has happened before, or by ignoring past history, we have misunderstood the problems of the present and merely repeated previous error. But you are now richly endowed in the art of inquiry, and I don't believe that you will be victims of that pitfall. Whatever your fields of specialization have been, you know what methods to apply to determine the facts, and how vitally important is this talent, when applied to that field which I sometimes feel needs research almost more than any other. I refer to the society in which we live. A great justice of the court over which I am privileged to preside, Justice Louis Brandeis, once wrote, "To secure social advance, we must regard the field of sociology and social legislation as a field for discovery and invention. Research is as necessary as it is in the field of science and invention, as it is in the field of mechanical and other arts." But since Brandeis wrote those words, I wonder how far we have really come in understanding the problems of our society and in getting at the real causes of those problems. For example, we hear on every side about the increasing amount of crime in this country. Now, this is a timely concern. Unfortunately, however, there are too many people who treat crime as a phenomenon separate and apart from the other affairs of life. But crime cannot be viewed as something isolated and unrelated to other aspects of the world in which we live. It is intimately connected to poverty, lack of education, absence of skills and therefore of opportunity, the lack of a proper home life, the prevalence of slums, and to the diseases of the mind and spirit which arise from our complicated and awful often planless urban living. Each of these factors, I hasten to say, is interrelated with the others, and there are many other considerations to add to the complexity of the matter. Only by carefully studying and evaluating crime and its manifold aspects can we expect to cope with it effectively. Anything less, I submit, is dealing with symptoms and not causes. As the ancients said, this would be like blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow the camel. This is only one of many examples which could be mentioned where careful and painstaking research is needed before we can hope to do more than deal superficially with the complicated and deep-seated problems of contemporary life. Now, I know that it may sound trite to say that you are living in a time of great change, but that is the fact, and I don't know how else to say it. During your lifetimes thus far, in the area of nuclear energy, space exploration, medicine, automation, think of the developments that have occurred. A spaceship of ours right now is approaching Mars. Since last November, it has been traveling toward that planet at a rate of more than 40,000 miles an hour. With good fortune, the craft will be close enough to photograph Mars next month. We have just witnessed the spectacular success of the Gemini space project, and the Russians are making similar stride. Supersonic airliners flying at 2,000 miles an hour will doubtless soon be developed. The fanciful tales of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells have been outspaced by modern developments. And during the remainder of your lifetimes, well into the 20th century, who knows what further changes will occur? To speak of the 21st century, I am sure, seems to you to be speaking of the distant future, but that future is much less distant than you think. You must plan for it now. When the year 2001 arrives, you will be in the full vigor of your lives and will be at a stage where your leadership can be most effective. You will then be the approximate age of President Johnson now, the age of many of our leading governmental officials, the age of many learned scholars in institutions such as this, and the age of most executives in the business and industrial world. Your lifespan will take you well into the next century. That century will therefore belong to you, and you will be responsible for it. The time to start preparing for it is now. But despite all these developments and all these changes, one unsolved problem dwarfs all the others in importance. I refer to the problem of just plain living together. For despite all the material progress which we have witnessed, there is still violent dissension in the world. People are still killing each other in certain areas, and intolerance, aggression, and lack of understanding are spawning potential conflicts in other areas. It is true that this problem of living together is the oldest problem in the world. It existed in biblical days and before. Conflicts between individuals disrupted society, and conflicts between societies frequently threatened their very existence. The problem of living together has never disappeared, and there is an urgency today to find a durable solution which surpasses the need of any other time, for the powers of destruction are far greater than they ever were before. Because the problem of living together has never been solved, there is no reason to take a defeatist attitude and assume that it never can be. We should profit by the mistakes of the past, but in the process of doing so, we should not become the victims of historical determinism. As has been pointed out, the uniqueness of man is represented by his ability to reverse old forces and create new ones. No, the problem of living together, despite discouraging setbacks which we are witnessing these days, is not insoluble. I have every confidence that the solutions will be found. And I say this because I have every confidence in young people like yourselves. I know that as long as you do not allow yourselves to be preoccupied with physical problems at the expense of spiritual and moral problems, as long as you adhere to the tenet that all men everywhere are endowed with equal rights, as long as you put this principle to work here in this country and acknowledge that freedom and opportunity must as promptly as possible be extended to all people everywhere, the problem of living together will be solved. I know that each one of you will play a significant role in this exciting mission, and to all of you, I wish the greatest success in the venture.
Chief Justice, we are grateful to you for your thoughtful and thought-provoking address. We're grateful to you for being with us and gracing this occasion today. Thank you very much, sir. Now we shall proceed to confer the degrees. By authority of the State of Michigan, vested in the Board of Trustees and delegated to me, I shall now confer degrees upon the candidates recommended by the faculty. And I call first upon Dr. Milton E. Melder, Chairman of the Faculty Committee on Honorary Degrees and Vice President for Research Development, to present the committee's candidates. Dr. Melder.
Faculty and the Honorary Degrees Committee, it is my honor to present first Earl Warren for the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws.
Earl Warren, your career as a lawyer, statesman, and jurist has been marked by eminent achievement. Your integrity, wisdom, and dedication to the best traditions of American government have enabled you to serve with uncommon success at all levels of government, most notably as governor of your native California and as Chief Justice of the United States. Wherever you have been entrusted with responsibility, you have displayed the finest quality of leadership. You have given freely of your time and energy to many civic duties and have supported with enthusiasm the cause of social service and human dignity. In recognition of your deep loyalty to the principles of justice, liberty, and democracy, and of your outstanding contributions to our country's welfare, Michigan State University confers upon you, sir, the degree of Doctor of Laws.
Next, it is my honor to present Elisha Gray II for the awarding of the Doctor of Laws degree.
Elisha Gray, your achievements as an engineer, business executive, and civic leader have been extraordinary. During your long career with the Whirlpool Corporation, you have acquired an outstanding reputation of progressive leadership, and you have made noteworthy contributions to American industry in such areas as personnel policy and management development. As chief executive officer of one of the nation's largest corporations, you have given your enthusiasm and influence to important civic projects, and especially to the development of higher education. And because of your dedication to the economic and civic welfare of your fellow citizens and to the progress of American industry, Michigan State University confers upon you, sir, the degree of Doctor of Laws.
Candidate to present is James S. Holden for the awarding of the Doctor of Laws degree.
It's a matter of extreme regret for us, this university, that Mr. Holden is unable to be here today because of his age. He celebrated his 90th birthday yesterday. However, this circumstance has not lessened the desire of the university to pay appropriate honor to him as a former student, civic leader, and public benefactor, and I shall read the citation setting forth his eminent qualifications and at an early date present the diploma and hood to Mr. Holden at his home in Detroit. James Stansberry Holden, in the decades since you were a student at Michigan State University, you have fashioned a distinguished career as a leader in metropolitan Detroit, the state, and national business communities. Your outstanding achievement in industry and finance have been matched by your notable accomplishments in civic improvement. The unstinted contribution of your energy, attention, and counsel has enriched your native city and state, and your many philanthropies have clearly demonstrated your continuing concern for your fellow man. In recognition of your significant role in promoting the economic, social, and cultural welfare of our American society, Michigan State University confers upon you the degree of Doctor of Laws.
The fourth candidate to present it is Verghese Kurian for the awarding of the Doctor of Science degree.
Verghese Kurian, since your graduation from Michigan State University nearly two decades ago, you have distinguished yourself in your native land as an engineer, administrator, and civil servant. In developing the dairy industry of India, you have advanced the welfare of thousands of your countrymen and have contributed notably to agricultural and industrial progress. The organization you have built is not only India's most successful cooperative venture, but is also a source of hope and livelihood in the many hundreds of villages associated with it. In recognition of your status as a distinguished alumnus, Michigan State University is pleased to confer upon you the degree of Doctor of Science.
The next candidate to present it is Frederick Seitz for the awarding of the Doctor of Laws degree.
Frederick Seitz, your activities as a research physicist, author, teacher, and public servant have marked you as an outstanding scientist, educator, and citizen. Your extensive and generous participation in professional organizations, particularly as president of the National Academy of Science, has brought you national renown. Your contributions to the government's research efforts, in particular your work with the Atomic Energy Commission, in the Office of Scientific Research and Development, and as chief scientific advisor to NATO, have given you a significant role in developing and defending our society. Because of your distinguished achievements and your unselfish sharing of your knowledge and wisdom with your fellow man, Michigan State University confers upon you the degree of Doctor of Laws.
The last candidate to be presented is Russell Thackeray for the awarding of the Doctor of Laws degree.
Russell I. Thackeray, your career as a journalist, teacher, and educational executive has been truly outstanding. During your years as an editor in Kansas and as a professor of journalism in Kansas State College, you demonstrated the knowledge and devotion to truth which have illuminated all of your endeavors. As a writer, administrator, and commentator, you have given abundant evidence of your keen insights into the pressing problems of education and their solution. The distinct contributions to higher education and to the welfare of this country made by the National Association of State Universities and Land-Grant Colleges reflect both your perception and your leadership. Recognizing your intellectual integrity, your dedication to the highest standards of journalism, and your contributions to the advancement of American higher education, Michigan State University confers upon you, sir, the degree of Doctor of Laws. I now call upon John R. Kinney of the class of 1950, the Director of Alumni Relations, to present those alumni who have been nominated for special recognition of their distinguished achievements. Mr. Kinney.
President Hanna, as Director of Alumni Relations, I have the honor to present five outstanding alumni who have been nominated by the Alumni Advisory Council to receive the Distinguished Alumni Awards of Michigan State University. Well, Antonio Bacigalupo, class of 1951, Coy G. Eklund, class of 1939. Norman J. Ellis, class of 1935. John C. Mackey, class of 1942. And John S. Pingle, class of 1939, please come forward. Mr. President, these alumni have been selected from among the nominees of alumni throughout the world to receive the Distinguished Alumni Awards of Michigan State University.
Dr. Bacigalupo, Mr. Eklund, Mr. Ellis, Congressman Mackey, and Mr. Pingle, by your outstanding accomplishments in widely diversified fields of activity, you have reflected great honor upon your alma mater. And in the name of Michigan State University and of all of its alumni, I present these awards to you and congratulate each of you upon being selected for this special recognition from the university of which you are distinguished alumni. Mr. Bacigalupo, Mr. Eklund, Mr. Ellis, Mr. Mackey, congratulations. Candidates for the doctoral degree will be presented by Dr. Melder as Dean of the School for Advanced Graduate Studies. Dean Melder.
Will the candidates for the doctoral degrees please rise? President Hanna, on behalf of the faculty, the respective chairman and deans who have certified the fulfillment of all the requirements, it is my honor to present these candidates to you for the awarding of the appropriate doctoral degree.
The doctoral degrees for which you have been recommended are granted to you by Michigan State University. And I now confer these degrees upon you and admit you to all of the high honors, rights, and distinctions pertaining to them, and congratulate each of you upon your scholarly achievements. Ladies and gentlemen, please come to the platform, and as your names are called by Dean Melder, to receive appropriate tokens of your accomplishments.
Elaine Vivian Alton. Duane L. Anderson.
Congratulations, Dr. Anderson.
Keith Anderson.
Congratulations, Dr. Anderson.
Frederick Sidney Bailey.
Congratulations, Dr. Bailey.
Vernon Mason Briggs, Jr.
Congratulations, Dr. Briggs.
Russell Devere Buhite.
Congratulations.
Rosaria A. Bogarella.
Congratulations, Dr. Bogarella.
Joel Laverne Burdine.
Congratulations, Dr. Burdine.
Milo Burnham.
Congratulations, Dr. Burnham.
Walter A. Busby.
Congratulations, Dr. Busby.
Jerry David Crosby.
Congratulations, Dr. Crosby.
Leo V. Deal.
Congratulations, Dr. Deal.
Max L. Densmore.
Congratulations, Dr. Densmore.
Donald David Dick.
Congratulations, Dr. Dick.
Anthony J. Dickema.
Congratulations to you, sir.
Thelbert A. Drake.
Congratulations.
Lee Floyd Ellis.
Congratulations, Dr. Ellis.
Edsel Lee Erickson.
Congratulations, Dr. Erickson.
Robert Russell Fink.
Congratulations, Dr. Fink.
James Robert Fleeker.
Congratulations, Dr. Fleeker.
Roger William Fox.
Congratulations, Dr. Fox.
John Block Friedman.
Congratulations, Dr. Friedman.
Kay Funk.
Congratulations, Dr. Funk.
Howard Gaelic.
Congratulations, Dr. Gaelic.
Richard L. Gantos.
Congratulations, Dr. Gantos.
Norma Magnus Gilmore.
Congratulations, Dr. Gilmore.
Edward Arthur Greenberg.
Congratulations, Dr. Greenberg.
Willard Stewart Griffin, Jr.
Congratulations, Dr. Griffin.
Evelyn Ann Hornstein.
Congratulations, Dr. Hornstein.
George A. Huff III.
Congratulations, Dr. Huff.
William Allen Householder.
Congratulations, Dr. Householder.
Cecil V. Hines.
Congratulations, Dr. Hines.
Tony Leonard Kaminsky.
Congratulations, Dr. Kaminsky.
Walter Kania.
Congratulations, Dr. Connie.
John Kuzuyan.
Congratulations, Dr. Kazuya.
Bruce James Kramer.
Congratulations, Dr. Kramer.
Raymond John Krishokaitis.
Congratulations, Dr. Kai.
Richard E. Lawrence.
Congratulations, Dr. Lawrence.
Andrine Jigusian Mondosian.
Congratulations, Dr. Mondosian.
Heron Q. Markarian.
Congratulations, Dr. Markarian.
Thomas A. Mays.
Congratulations, Dr. Mays.
Elwood Eugene Miller.
Congratulations, Dr. Miller.
Arthur Allen Nethery.
Congratulations, Dr. Nethery.
Charles John Orlebecki.
Congratulations, Dr. Orlebecki.
Moreland Stanley Perlmutter.
Congratulations, Dr. Perlmutter.
Prem Shankar Prasad.
Congratulations, Dr. Prasad.
Albert David Pulamini.
Congratulations, Dr. Pulamini.
Louis Edward Remick.
Congratulations, Dr. Remick.
Gerhard John Ross.
Congratulations, Dr. Ross.
Rufus Burr Rutland.
Congratulations, Dr. Rutland.